This is Stuart Molina, music director of the Harrisburg Symphony Orchestra. Today I'll be talking about William Walton's Partita for Orchestra, which we'll be performing in our next Masterworks concert. William Walton was born in the earliest part of the 20th century, and one would expect from a composer of that period that he would be extremely modern and stretching the boundaries of tonality and going into directions somewhat like the other composers of his time, of music that's progressively more and more challenging to listen to. But Walton resisted all of that. He stayed within this neo-romantic kind of feel in his composition. And the Partita for Orchestra, which was written in 1957, very much into the modern period of composition, is still very much a piece that's delightful to listen to. It has complex harmonies, but very much stays within a tonal framework. And if anything, it's reflective of the movie music that he had been writing in the decades before, most notably for some of the Shakespearean movies of the 30s and 40s. In the Partita for Orchestra, he chooses the name Partita, I think, to avoid expectations of a huge symphonic work. If he called it a symphony, people would be expecting something monumental. By calling it a partita, it's clear that he's going to produce a suite of movements that are not of substantial size. In this particular case, there are three movements, which is shorter than the Bach partita, which would be six movements. But the outer movements very much maintain the feeling that Bach would have used, with a toccata in the first movement and a gigue, a quick dance in 6/8 time in the last movement. The middle movement, also very much dance-like, with a very nicely flowing 6/8 time. So what is this piece about? Well, I think Walton himself answered that question quite nicely when George Zell, the great composer of the Cleveland Orchestra, who premiered this piece, asked him for notes about what the piece is about. And Walton responded, and I'll quote Walton, "It is surely easier to write about a piece of creative work if there is something problematical about it. Indeed, it seems to me, the more problematical, the greater the flow of words. Unfortunately, from this point of view, my partita poses no problems, has no ulterior motive or meaning behind it, and makes no attempt to ponder the imponderables." Now, I think in a certain sense he's underplaying the wonderfulness of this work, but at the same time, I think he's being quite honest. This work does not strive to make deep points about human existence. This is a piece that is there to provide excitement, to provide beauty, to create, in a sense, a 15-minute entertainment for the audience. And in this, I think it's brilliantly successful. What is the harmonic language that William Walton is working within? Well, to begin with, one must start with the fact that it is tonal music. It works within a tonal framework, meaning major and minor chords. Having said that, it's equally important to note that Walton, for the most part, uses complex chords. Really, from the very beginning of the piece, he sets up multi-tonalities at the same time. The piece begins with an explosion, and the chord that he outlines in the very first measure is a combination of E major and C major or C minor. The chord sounds like this. So we have E major, and this is repeated in the horns and trumpets, and it's alternating with C minor, so you get this kind of... So, let's take a look at this combination. First of all, you cannot find two chords that are much further apart in terms of standard harmony. If you go by your circle of fifths, which is how you traverse around all of the existing keys, E major would be furthest away from B flat major, which is only one step away from E flat major. And C minor has the same key signature, the same flats as does E flat major. So you're really one step away from the furthest distance from E major. The other thing about this combination of chords is it allows for a whole bunch of different chords to emerge. The first of these that I'll mention is what I would call a major minor chord. Because E major has the E natural, when you combine that with the C minor chord, you get this kind of C major, C minor at the same time. So I'll call that, just for the sake of simplicity, a C major minor chord. And that's very clearly outlined in this opening chord. In addition, you have an augmented chord, which is two major thirds on top of each other, which are the first two notes of the E chord, and the C, which is of course part of the C major minor chord. So again, you hear very much this augmented chord and this major minor chord. And it's out of these chords that he creates his first melody. In fact, it's pretty much entirely out of the C major minor chord. Here's the opening melody. So, what do we have? First, a C major outline, and then a big leap to what he writes as a D sharp, but is the same as an E flat. So there it is, C major minor, in our very first melody. And then this progresses. Ending with this clearly slightly cacophonous chord, but what this chord is again a combination of two diminished triads, diminished being minor thirds on minor thirds. That's one of them. That's the other, separated by a half step. So again, it's these combined chords that are very far apart harmonically that create the signature sound for this piece. Walton then takes this melody and develops it further, creating yet other harmonic chords that are slightly complex. For example, taking this melodic fragment and adding an open fifth on the bottom, he creates what would be called, well, you could call it a 13 chord or a 13 chord with a sharp 9. What it basically is a G minor chord with a D major chord on top of it. You know, you might recognize this from James Bond. At any rate, you heard it first here. So Walton takes this strange G minor chord and creates a section like this. And so on and so forth. He continues developing, continues using these fragmented melodies, and builds to the first big climax of the movement, which is extremely dramatic. The other thing to remember about Walton is he's a brilliant orchestrator, almost astonishing because he was, for the most part, self-taught. For someone self-taught to have developed this unbelievable mastery of the orchestral sounds and the ability to combine them to such effect is pretty amazing. At any rate, this first climax where the whole orchestra comes in a very dramatic moment. And so on. Here too, he's taking what would be just a plain F sharp 7 chord, adding a flat 9, which is still very much within 19th century harmonization. Then he starts with the major minor work. So first, he gives you a C natural on top of the C, instead of, and then the A natural in the melody against the A sharp. So there again, you have the same kind of playing with standard harmony to create this very dramatic moment. Finally, we reach a moment where he resolves into what is much more standard harmony. And he does this in each of the movements, begins with these strange combinations of chords, all derivative of the opening of the first movement, and at some point resolves in a beautiful way into normal tonality. In this particular place, he ends up in B major, and even here, although it's very clearly B major with no strangeness, there are second degrees of the scale and fourth degrees of the scale, which add a sense of just a little bit of modernity to this otherwise very 19th century moment. And so forth. You can hear it's very different from the opening, from these kinds of chords to these kinds of chords. At any rate, it's a very lovely juxtaposition. The first movement continues on in that way. The second movement is very much different from the first. As exciting and driven as the toccata is, the second movement, which he calls a pastoral siciliana, or a Sicilian pastoral, begins extremely quietly with a simple duet between a viola solo and an oboe solo. Listen to this opening and see if you can hear the same kind of harmonic combinations that we had in the first movement. Well, the first thing that we note is that it has an E-flat pedal. But what's equally clear is that the piece is not in E-flat, but rather in A-flat, so it's what we would call a dominant pedal. But again, instead of just being in pure A-flat, he's in A-flat major minor, both combined. The first part of the viola phrase sounds like A flat major, but then that sounds like A flat minor with a C flat on top. So altogether, and so on. When he changes the orchestration to add an accompaniment beyond just the solo viola, he makes this even clearer by making the chords that the violin and the harp are playing in accompaniment this major minor chord. It's really quite a lovely approach to harmonization of this simple melody. The piece progresses, again, through developing these themes, and once again we reach a moment where things are going to resolve into standard tonal harmony. This is perhaps the most spectacular moment in the piece, where the whole orchestra plays very lushly in counterpoint. A very simple and beautiful melody. This is made up of very compact chords. And the idea of this close harmonization within orchestral groups, for example, this first one is just woodwinds playing, and then the strings play it. And then we have a continuation of just the ending chords. and so on. This kind of orchestration is going to be used throughout the rest of the piece, particularly in the last movement, where you get a lot of movement all in triads. That kind of approach to orchestration. So that's really enough said about this beautiful second movement. The third movement is once again fast. It's in 6/8 time. He calls it the Giga Burlesca, a burlesque gig. The gig, once again, being the dance that closed most of the Bach suites and partitas. A lively dance from the Baroque period. And this is presented now as kind of a rondo with a theme that comes back again. But as much as it's a rondo, it really is almost just a succession of themes that play off of each other and progress in one way, and then in the second half of the piece, progress backwards in the opposite way. It starts out very quietly with the low strings and the low woodwinds playing a melody that, once again, is a combination of two keys, both E major and C major. So it starts out, this is how the theme goes. Clearly an E major. Then you get the C natural in the bass, but with a tail that's still in E major, with an F sharp and a G sharp, and then it's repeated again with a tail that's in C major, with an F natural and a G natural. So again, he's setting up this dual tonality approach, but he soon abandons it with the first theme, which is very securely in E major. And so forth. Just a very jolly, very happy, simple melody in the strings. This is then developed using, again, our opening melody as a foil. The next main melody group we're going to hear is presented in the trumpets and horns. Here he's using chords. Again, chords that are off by one half step from each other. The trumpets first play a G-sharp minor melody, but strongly suggesting G minor as well, one half step down. G sharp minor, G minor. And this is answered by the horns in C sharp minor, and then again developed through the rest of the orchestra. A little bit later, we get kind of a comic moment, a moment where he presents a plodding, funny, goofy, heavy-handed theme, first in the horns, and accompanied by, among others, the trombones. It's a very simple, almost simplistic melody, and he harmonizes it in seconds, in a very tight interval. So this will sound like this. And that is then developed through the rest of the orchestra, including the trumpets that will play it later on, and then the whole string section. Our main second theme that closes this opening section is presented in the trumpet, just the trumpet alone, accompanied by pizzicato in the strings. And again, it's a very simple, melodic, thoroughly tonal melody. Joyful, very puckish. All of these melodies are reminiscent of movie music. And I think that in listening to this partita for orchestra, you have to keep in mind that Walton was a cinematic composer. Even in his serious concert works, and I do consider this a serious concert work, he still has the same kind of orchestral color that you would come to expect in his movie scores. And the reason why when listening to this, a lot of it sounds familiar is because he was extremely influential on a whole later generation of film score composers. And the movie that we, the music that we hear in the movies today, very much owes a debt of thanks to William Walton for his work, along with composers like Wolfgang Korngold and Max Steiner and Franz Waxman. These were great composers who happened to find a voice in the cinema and create some wonderful music for it. So with this cinematic piece, we get our concert off to a very splendid and exciting opening. To hear about our next work on the program, come back for the next podcast.